Wisconsin's groundwater can have upwards of 20 different pesticide compounds in it, and state regulators say they don't fully understand the risks. It's Friday, November 14th, and this is Wisconsin Today Morning News. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. We've finally made it to Friday. Coming up on the show today, WPR's politics team takes a look at the lingering effects of the government shutdown, and a story about two Appleton sisters and their love of reading. Stay with us.
Support for WPR comes from the state of Wisconsin, business sponsors, and tens of thousands of members who contribute. Thank you to everyone who makes WPR possible. On air, on the app, and at WPR.org.
Wisconsin lacks standards or health advisory limits for more than half of pesticide-related chemicals analyzed in the state. As Daniel Kading reports, regulators shared the figures yesterday during a joint meeting of policymaking boards for the state's agricultural and natural resource agencies.
The Wisconsin Departments of Natural Resources and Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection collaborate on monitoring pesticides and developing groundwater standards. DACAP hydrogeologist Ken Patricus says the state has standards or health advisory levels for only 53 out of 118 pesticide-related chemicals analyzed in groundwater samples.
We know that on a single groundwater sample, a drinking water, we can get upwards of up to 20 different pesticide compounds in it. We do not know the risk of what that means.
Patricus says there are also no state surface water limits for pesticides. Regulators say lacking research has posed challenges with setting standards, but the DNR plans to begin crafting regulations for several pesticides by early 2027. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A bill advancing in Wisconsin would withhold pay from judges while they're suspended pending investigation. Sarah Lear has the details.
Republican sponsors say they're responding to the case of Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan. Federal prosecutors filed charges against her this spring. They allege Dugan helped a man evade immigration agents when she led him through the side door of her courtroom. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has suspended Dugan while that case is ongoing. As bill author Representative Shea Sortwell notes, that suspension is paid.
Taxpayers will now be funding an extended vacation for her while paying for additional taxpayer dollars for reserve judges to fill in.
The latest version of the bill would only apply to judges facing criminal charges, not other alleged wrongdoing. Dugan has maintained her innocence. The case against her is set for trial next month. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The federal government shutdown is over, but Wisconsin's congressional delegation is still split along party lines about what it was about in the first place. President Donald Trump signed the short-term funding bill ending the shutdown Wednesday night. It was made possible because of a handful of Democrats who sided with Republicans this week. None of them were from Wisconsin. Democrats were demanding to include an extension of Affordable Care Act tax credits in the bill to keep health insurance premiums from spiking. Republicans refused. Ahead of the U.S. House vote Wednesday night, Republican Congressman Brian Stile of Janesville told Bloomberg that the shutdown never should have happened in the first place.
No one benefits. A lot of people were hurt. And I think at the end of the day, Democrats will look back and recognize that this was a failure, that they should have never shut the federal government down.
Democrats have accused Republicans of not caring about health care costs rising for 22 million Americans who rely on the ACA. Well, that government shutdown may officially be over, but there are lingering effects across the nation, including in Wisconsin. WPR's Anya Van Wagtendonk and Rich Kramer joined Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson to discuss.
Anya, let's start with you on one tangible effect of this shutdown that I'd say none of us saw coming the last time we talked. There was a provision added to the shutdown bill about THC.
Yeah, so THC, that's a psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. And a few years ago, a change in the federal farm bill that was meant to promote hemp production ended up maybe kind of inadvertently legalizing low-dose THC products that are derived from hemp. So like if you've seen THC tea at the grocery store or CBD gummies at the gas station, that is all because of this kind of federal loophole. And so then this last-minute provision in the shutdown bill just closed that loophole. It bans the unregulated sale of intoxicating hemp-based products. So beginning a year from now, all those gummies, vapes, oils, beverages, all of that becomes illegal.
And some states might notice this more than others. Why might it be more acutely felt in Wisconsin?
Well, marijuana is illegal here. There is no legal recreational or medicinal access for anyone. But this federal loophole has meant that a whole local industry has cropped up for those low-dose hemp-derived products that are allowed. So for people who use those products, there's not a local alternative. And for the business owners, the distributors, it marks a huge pivot point compared to neighboring states that have some form of legalized marijuana.
Rich, kind of zooming out here a little bit, Republicans and Democrats were pretty dug in for more than a month over the shutdown. In the end, a handful of Democrats in the House and Senate voted to end it. Were any of them from Wisconsin?
Nope. Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin voted against the short-term funding bill that did reopen the government this week. So did Wisconsin's House Democrats, Gwen Moore of Milwaukee and Mark Pocan of Madison. They were all holding out and demanding Republicans include an extension of COVID-19-era tax credits aimed at keeping Affordable Care Act health insurance premiums from spiking. Unsurprisingly, all seven Republicans in Wisconsin's congressional delegation voted for the funding bill. They've been claiming Democrats were using federal workers and others as pawns in some sort of political chess match. With the government reopened, some Republicans are even claiming Democrats held out for nothing.
So you referenced what Democrats had wanted as part of any shutdown deal, the extension of those tax credits. What's going to happen with those?
Part of that deal that got a handful of Democrats in the Senate and the House to support the GOP's short-term funding bill was a promise to hold a future vote on the extension of those ACA tax credits. We've already seen evidence that insurance premiums were going up in the state marketplace in anticipation of those credits expiring. I can't predict the future, but I can tell you that this whole discussion about healthcare affordability has already been and will continue to be a big issue for Democrats, and you can bet we're going to hear more about it leading into the 2026 midterms.
Turning to non-shutdown news here, Anya, the president issued a pardon this week that affected an issue we've been reporting on a lot here since 2020, fake electors or false electors. What happened there?
Right. So to go back in time for a moment, 2020, Joe Biden won the presidential election, including in the state of Wisconsin. But President Trump and his allies contested that outcome. One way that they did that was to have Republican electors certify that Trump won certain swing states that he did not, including Wisconsin. So in Wisconsin, 10 people got together at the Capitol and signed official looking documents saying Trump won Wisconsin, which again, he did not. But those people who signed those documents, those are the Wisconsin false electors. And they were among those pardoned. So were false electors from other states.
At the state level, our Attorney General Josh Call has brought felony charges against three people. What does the presidential pardon mean for that case?
That case is ongoing because federal pardons don't affect state cases. And in fact, none of the people on the pardon list were facing federal charges at all. So the whole thing was more of a signal or a symbol than anything else.
That was WPR's Anya Van Wagtendonk and Rich Kramer speaking with WPR political editor Sean Johnson. Coming up, two sisters share the story of their love of reading. Stay with us.
Thanks to community support, Wisconsin Public Radio continues to bring trusted news, lifelong learning, and stories that reflect who we are, free and accessible to all. WPR is powered by you. Visit WPR.org/together.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Tyler Ditter with a story about two Appleton sisters and their love of reading.
Beth Lowe grew up spending most of her free time immersed in books. Now living with her sister, Mai J. Lo Lee, she has come to find that her love for reading has had a positive influence on her family, despite how her parents felt about it. The sisters talked with one another about that experience as part of a StoryCorps mobile tour stop in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
My name is Beth Lowe. I am 49 years old.
My name is Mai J. Lowley. I am 43 years old today. So Beth, how does it feel being the older sister and not having an older somebody to go to?
You know, it's funny you say that because on the way over here, we're referencing that you and the younger sisters each had a sibling, almost a playmate that you can hang out with.
Talk boys,
yes,
talk girls.
Talk boys, yeah, talk makeup, yep, as you transition into your preteen, teen years. And I was just saying, I have nobody in our culture, and we are Hmong. I'm the oldest, so there's never that effort to get friends or people that you can talk to outside of your familial setting. So it was quite lonely growing up being the oldest girl in the family.
Do you think that's why you like books so much?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me why you like to read so much, and what do books mean?
I think if you ask anybody who loves books, it's just you get into the page and you become the characters. You become where you go, where they go. You feel what they feel.
You live with me now. You've been living with my family for 2 years, and I cannot tell you like how you've normalized reading for my daughter.
Yes.
Because whereas like with her peer group, enjoying reading is not seen as cool. And I try to do it in front of her all the time, but for her, when she saw you do it like during your free time and not watch TV, not use your phone, where you always had a book in your bag or you had a book in every room or a book, like for her, she's like, I can put a book in every free space.
Yeah.
You know, and I just really appreciate that because for you living with us, that's really normalized, like very for her, like it's normal to read. Everybody should read, but it's okay to read whatever you want.
Right.
You know, and for her to like know that that's like normal. Because, you know, in our household, that was not normal.
Right.
We used to get yelled at for reading.
Well, as you remember, our mother would literally come take the books out of our hands and rip it out. And I remember I think it was last week, you were asking Xenia to go do something. And she's like, Mama, I'm reading. And I think you just silently closed the door and just walked out because what can you say when your child is like, what do you mean I can't? I'm reading.
I felt so triggered when I was like, go do your chores and stop reading. And I thought, trauma. You know,
right.
Like I was like, I had to go journal. I had to go write about like, how do I feel? What is that? Because I remember my mom and our parents yelling at us about reading too much or that this wasn't going to be a skill set that like brides needed.
Right.
You know, and I had to explain to her, like, just so you know, Grandma and Grandpa were not encouraging of us reading. You know, and I remember when you went off to college, my dad had a book burning out in the farm because he was like, what the hell am I going to do with all these thousands of books?
Yeah.
And then he just had this big bonfire and just threw all the books in there. And I didn't realize like what it meant at the time or all of that stuff. But I just thought he burnt books because he didn't want the younger kids to read it or to be influenced by it or to like go to college.
I think you and I, we snuck it in wherever we could. Thinking back to my youth, that was one of the rebellious things that I could have done in terms of from a cultural perspective. Sadly, our mother would never say, we have a daughter who reads. It's always, I have a daughter who reads. So there's that hint of shame in that. And I appreciate you saying that about me influencing your daughter in a small capacity.
Oh, no.
That's beautiful.
That's a big capacity. You know what a big capacity that is.
That was Beth Lowe and Mai J. Lowley of Appleton. Their interviews were recorded at StoryCorps, a national initiative to record and collect stories of everyday people. Excerpts were selected and produced by Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of WPR and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Tyler Ditter.
And of course, we'll end with a quick check of your forecast. Sunny and warmer than usual today with highs in the 50s and 60s. Overnight, lows down into the 40s. Really windy tomorrow, highs back into the 50s, and much colder by Sunday, rounding out the weekend, with highs only getting into the 30s and 40s. And that'll do it for this Friday. Thanks so much for joining us for Wisconsin Today Morning News. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producer today was Courtney Everett. Have a great rest of your day and a fantastic weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.